This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Mexico City and its surrounding areas are reeling from a massive 7.1 magnitude earthquake that struck on Tuesday. This happened less than 2 weeks after an 8.1 magnitude earthquake hit Mexico, killing more than 100 people. Dozens of buildings have been destroyed in the second quake, and the death toll continues to rise. As of this recording, 226 people have been confirmed dead. Rescue crews are working around the clock to pull survivors out of the wreckage from the earthquake. Nearly 5 million homes and workplaces have lost electricity. People around the country are desperately looking for relatives, trying to ensure their loved ones are alive. We go now to Mexico City, where Laura Carlson joins us. She's the director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy and a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. She's a frequent guest on this program. Welcome back to the show, Laura, and we are so grateful you are safe.
Well, I am too. Thank you, Sonali. So it's a mess around here.
Yes, describe the scene around you. What happened? We are talking to you a day after the second earthquake hit. Describe where you were and what you saw.
Well, I was in an old building in close to the downtown area of the city, which is a part that's built on a lake bed, so there's a lot of movement there. And I was up on the top floor, and we began to feel it. The alarm, there's a seismic alarm system here in Mexico City, but this one had an epicenter that was so close to the city, and because it was a different kind of earthquake, it wasn't connected to the plates and the faults that are out in the Pacific Ocean. We didn't really get the alarm until we were already feeling the movement. So we got up and we began to try to get out of the building. There was a fire escape stairs, metal stairs, and they were swaying so badly that we didn't know if we were going to be able to get down them, grabbing hold of the banisters. We finally got out of the building, and the scene there was utter mayhem. There were people in the streets there near Reforma, the major avenue of Mexico City, crying, hugging each other, still feeling the earthquake, which went on for a while. And many of them almost hysterical, because there are a lot of people here who remember the September 19th, the very same day, earthquake of 1985. So the trauma runs deep, and you could see it in the streets. Yesterday when this earthquake hit, the most powerful earthquake I've felt in over 30 years here in Mexico at 1:14 p.m.
And that's such an important history. It was 32 years ago that this 1985 earthquake happened right in Mexico City, and people, you know, it was a very, very severe earthquake that killed a lot of people and billions of dollars of damage. Now, Mexico City, but just less than 2 weeks earlier, Mexico had another earthquake in which people in the city and surrounding cities and states were impacted as well. People hadn't even started recovering from that one fully yet, right?
No, that earthquake was also the strongest I'd ever felt until this one. It caused a lot less damage because of the type of movement, but mostly because the epicenter was much farther away.
Right.
So although technically on the Richter scale, it was a larger earthquake, it had less impact on Mexico City and caused less damage, with most of the impact taking place more in the southern part of the country. But with this and the hurricanes that have been hitting, Mexico is feeling like what's happening to us. Mexico's feeling besieged between earthquakes, hurricanes, and Donald Trump lately.
How have the recent hurricanes impacted Mexico? We've had a lot of focus on the Caribbean, on you know, Houston and Louisiana, but what about Mexico?
Well, there have been some flooding also, mostly in the southern states and the Pacific area. I was in Oaxaca when there was some major flooding from one of the first tropical storms. And it's just unusual for there to be so many storms in a row as we've seen this year. So the season is not over yet. And there could be even more trouble from hurricanes. Most of the damage, the hard damage from Irma and this hurricane have been taking place in the Caribbean, but Mexico's been affected by it.
Right, and actually Hurricane Maria has now hit Puerto Rico. Laura, let's talk about the way in which these sorts of earthquakes impact a big city. Because of course, when you have population density like you do in Mexico City, you can have so much more damage, particularly if the infrastructure might be old, not fortified, etc., right?
That's right, Sonali, and that's why we're seeing that even though it's a bit farther away, most of the deaths have taken place here in Mexico City. And some of them are quite concentrated, like the tragic situation of a school where half the school building collapsed, and there are over 20 children who were killed just from that one incident alone. In fact, the majority of the people killed in Mexico City, from figures we have so far, are children,
wow,
unfortunately, and the death toll in general is above 200. We anticipate that toll is going to continue to rise. There's still many, many people who are missing and who were last seen in buildings that have collapsed. And there's a building that collapsed just 5 blocks from my house. And I went by this morning. They're now using heavy machinery to excavate that building, which probably means that they don't expect there are any more survivors there, and they're just clearing out the rubble to see if they can find bodies and to get it cleared out. At other places, there's still active rescue operations going on to see if they can get survivors, some of whom, in fact, have been sending out messages by cell phone to tell rescue workers where they're trapped.
Wow, that's incredible. And of course, because of digital technology, we have a lot of footage of what has happened. You know, people were recording even during the earthquake or in the immediate aftermath, just to get a sense of how it looked. You know, images of and videos of buildings literally collapsing in front of their eyes. What has the government response been like, Laura? I mean, you can sort of, I imagine you have about a 10-day period of being able to judge a government response from the first earthquake, and now a day after the second earthquake. Is Peña Nieto's government responding in a way that is most efficient for its residents?
There was a major speech last night, very late, in which he declared that Mexico's on full disaster alert, that all the funding will be directed toward these operations with a priority, of course, on rescuing survivors. They're trying to act quickly and at least appear efficient because of what happened in 85, the extreme criticisms about the negligence and the corruption of the governmental response. Okay. Their armed forces, the military is in the streets actually helping with the rescue operations. We've been very critical of the military, but this is the kind of job that they should be doing. When a natural disaster happens like this, it's the moment for a government to shine, because this is when an unequivocal response for public service should take place. But it's also a moment when bad governments are revealed as such. And what we'll be watching for right now, then, in the aftermath of the earthquake, is how the rescue operations and the cleanup operations go, but also what happens to the money. There's a lot of national and international aid funds that will be coming in that already are directed toward these efforts. And what's happened in Mexico in the past is that those funds have been diverted to corruption on everywhere from a political to a personal level. With upcoming elections next year, everyone's going to be very vigilant to make sure that a lot of that money doesn't end up where it's not supposed to be.
What sort of aid has the U.S. offered? And actually, let's take a moment to talk about the sort of bizarre debacle after the first earthquake hit September 7th. Mexico and the Mexican government felt deeply slighted by the Trump administration, which took far too long to call and offer condolences. I mean, the U.S. and Mexico are neighbors. There's a tradition, you know, from going back many, many years that the two countries express, you know, their relations when disaster hits, and Donald Trump, who has strained ties with Mexico over his border wall and other issues, took a long time to call Peña Nieto.
Yeah, that's right. And so in this case, the State Department and President Trump ended up sending a message out fairly quickly because of that situation the last time. You know, it just seems like Donald Trump looks for ways of slighting Mexico on almost every front and every opportunity that's been going on since the campaign. And the fact of taking, I think it was more than a week, to call about the previous earthquake, which did cause damage and death and was a major event here in Mexico, was unconscionable. And then the excuse that he gave, well, Peña Nieto hasn't had cell phone service, was absolutely ridiculous. And of course, everyone here in Mexico, and I'm sure in the United States as well, knows that that was ridiculous. So they tried this time to have a more reasonable diplomatic response, but there's still a very strained relationship between the two countries. You know, that reminds me too that one of the things that we really see at these times, and that I certainly saw when I was walking around yesterday right afterwards and took a walk around this very heavily hit neighborhood this morning, is the way that the Mexican people have come together to confront the hardship. There are hundreds of mostly young people in the streets right now who are handing out water, who are coordinating the donations, who are searching in the rubble. Somebody grabbed a bunch of shopping carts to cart away the pieces of buildings that have fallen. You could see them working throughout the entire night in some of the places, especially where buildings completely fell down. So this just compare it for a minute to this image that Trump has been putting out of Mexicans as rapists and thieves, as the people who are going to kill your kids as immigrants in the United States, and you can see what a falsehood it is. These are people capable of coming together and helping each other in ways that many reporters who are covering the earthquake and have covered natural disasters here in Mexico say they haven't seen anywhere else in the world.
Wow. What are the sort of ways in which US Americans and Mexicans can express solidarity with one another in these times with climate change fueling greater hurricanes? You know, we're in California, which is also earthquake prone, and with these recent earthquakes in Mexico, what ways do you think can there be cross-border solidarity to undermine the corrupt leaders that both countries have, and also the Trump administration in particular in the United States that seems hell-bent on demonizing Mexicans?
Yes, well, I think it's very important for people in the United States to support immigrants at this time with taking back the DREAM Act.
And also, of course, I'm sure there's plenty of Mexican Americans here in the US and undocumented folks, naturalized citizens who have family in Mexico that might be impacted by the earthquake.
Yeah, so the transnational, the binational ties between our countries are very, very, very strong. And we've been trying to build up and help build up those binational grassroots organizations ties in order to create a counter narrative to what Donald Trump and the anti-immigration forces are putting out these days, that we saw once again when they rescinded the DREAM Act for young people who arrived, which is about 70% Mexican of the people that are actually enrolled in that program. So it's important to do that, and it's important to join those movements that are defending the rights of immigrants that are there, because these transnational families, they don't need major disruption at this time, which is what would happen with deportation of people who have been there for decades. Mexico also, you know, needs the help of maintaining those relationships and the family relationships stable right now, and defending the rights of the migrants that are here, that are there in the United States, excuse me. Also, as far as donations, since we haven't had a lot of internet time, I haven't had a chance to look to see what's out there, but there are organizations that are sponsoring crowdfunding, I think sites and other types of measures to help out with the earthquakes here in Mexico. So I would really recommend looking those up and seeing if there's some in your area or some online, and donating through those, because they're very good, usually the grassroots organizations, at getting aid to where it needs to go. And especially rather than trying to go through some of the very, very large international aid organizations or the governments themselves. Mm-hmm. Those are two ways. And looking at just how to begin to say, hey, this is a very important relationship for us, for our communities, and for our nations, and we need to stop what's happening in terms of the crisis in the U.S.-Mexico relationship that has been taking place since Donald Trump came to the presidency.
Finally, Laura, I just also want to ask you, in terms of the rebuilding that happened after the 1985 earthquake, which killed 5,000 people, was there a concerted effort to build better buildings and infrastructure to protect against earthquakes? And could that have, you know, led to a lower death toll this time round? And any lessons for rebuilding from here on out? Because earthquakes will happen. There's very little one can do to protect oneself from earthquake except for building stronger structures that keep us safer.
Yes, I think that that is a factor. I think there's going to have to be an architectural analysis to know exactly. But for example, this building where I am was built right after the 85 earthquake. And although it moved a lot, it withstood the earthquake rather well. And I think they really improved building codes, because what they found in 1985 is that a government contractor would end up using, say, metal supports that were far less than what the building planners themselves had specified in order to save money and pocket the difference. These were substandard buildings, and that's why in 1985, a lot of the buildings that completely collapsed were government buildings. So I think they learned a lesson that the human cost of that can be tremendous, and as well as the political cost if something happens, and that we were spared slightly because a lot of the buildings that were rebuilt, the newer buildings, did withstand this earthquake despite the force of it. We still have a lot of old buildings that have been damaged in 85, then 10 days ago, and now. So those buildings are being closed up, and they will have to go through a thorough inspection before people can go back in them. This is why we're seeing so many people that are homeless right now.
Right. The aftermath of the earthquake could be felt for a long time still. Laura, again, really glad that you're safe. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest is Laura Carlson, director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy and a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus, speaking to us from Mexico City a day after the 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.